When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Joe Rimmer and today I'm joined by Sean Bradbury. How are we?
Very well, thanks. Yeah. Nice environment.
Yeah. We'll chat about the environment in a minute. Let me just introduce Ian Doyle.
Hello, Joseph. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
I'm pleased about that. It's nice to see you.
Yep. Always a normal hello with Ian. Paul Ghost, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. Yeah, I feel like you're talking in slightly hushed tones because we're in our office. Yeah, we're either about to stay in the
workman. We are right in the middle of our office. We're in a different location today, as you can see. We're not in one of the side rooms. We're in a bit of a booth. So if you do hear a bit of noise, people making tea, making their lunch, writing things on the computers, you know why.
Making their lunch.
Well, there's a little kitchen there, don't you? Yeah. You can come into the office every now and again. You'll find these things out. No, you don't. Right. Anyway, well, you were out and about today. We'll start with. We'll put you back on the spot, Ian. Then you were out and about today. You're at Jürgen Klopp's press conference, and obviously the main thing that he was being asked about was the future of Mohamed Salah. Who I think it's been an open secret for a long time that Saudi Arabia.
They've got some money, have you?
They have got some money.
They've got a bit of money now.
But Saudi Arabian clubs would like to sign Mohamed Salah. Those reports seem to accelerate a little bit last night. David Ornstein of The Athletic saying that Al Ittihad, the same club that Fabinho plays for.
Champions.
The champions would like to sign Mohamed Salah from Liverpool this summer, if possible. That got a firm no, didn't it, from Liverpool? The idea of it, I should say. What did Jürgen Klopp have to say about Salah's future in his press conference?
Well, he kind of basically repeated what Liverpool said. No, he's not for sale. Mm-hmm. And he also went as far to say that Salah is 100% committed to Liverpool. Then he obviously spoke a bit more at length about the impact of Saudi Arabia and what, you know, how the difference it's making to the transfer market. It was quite interesting, actually, where he said, look, use Wigan Athletic of all clubs as an example, where he said, if Liverpool want to sign a player from Wigan or somebody of Liverpool's level, they'd go to Wigan and they'd probably have enough money to buy the player. You know, they'd get it done. And he says, man, that's just the way it's been. You know, Bayern Munich, you mentioned them as well. Dortmund, they're on that same level. But now he says, now the Saudi Arabians have come in and they appear to be on another level on top of that. So the inference without him actually saying it is that Liverpool are now in danger, as we've seen already. Not just Liverpool, but Man City as well. And any kind of Premier League team almost, apart from Newcastle, although there's probably a reason for that, that they're having their best players, you know, at risk of being taken because they're getting offered so much money. And that's just the way it is at the moment. I mean, quite where how long that lasts, I know that, you know, with these things, certainly you look at China, made a go at it, America to a certain extent, Russia for a short while. I think the difference with Saudi Arabia is that they have they've got a rich history of football. You know, I think Al Ittihad, they've been going for about 90-odd years. So, you know, this isn't a team that's just started now. You know what I mean? They've been going for quite some time, and Saudi Arabia in the World Cup, we've seen even, what was it, November, December, they beat Argentina, who went on to win it. So I don't think they're going to go away in that sense. It's just whether or not the actual, you know, the amount of money that's been pumped in lasts for as long as it does. And the reason I'm saying that is because then you've got these players like Salah, who there's no guarantee next year that someone's going to come in and make a massive bid for you in terms of the amount of money that they're going to offer you a week. I mean, I saw a report today that said Al Ittihad want to make Salah the most highest paid player in football history. £1.5 million for a week. Now, I don't care who you play for and how much money you've already got. And I think we believe Salah's on between 300 and 400 grand a week at Liverpool. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money. And we can discuss, well, what point does enough money become enough money? You know, what you how are you going to spend that extra £1.2 million a week or whatever? But that's irrelevant. But what is relevant to Liverpool is there's only a week to go in their transfer window. Forget when the Saudi one closes, because we don't even know exactly when that is, do we? September, there's been a lot of.
I thought it was the seventh.
Right.
Forward from the 20th, we think.
But the point is, that's another 6 days after the Premier League one shuts, and I can't see any club, unless they're absolutely desperately want to get rid of a player, that's going to sell there. So we're going to have a week of this, I think, and Liverpool are going to be open to this, because what happens if, let's be honest about it, they bid £150 million for Salah, who Liverpool, I think most supporters are now, given the impact of Saudi Arabia and the fact they're so keen on him, that he's probably going to go next summer. It might be this conversation that we have then, and we have the same thing again, and this time Liverpool have had a full year to prepare for it. And of course, he's be 32 then, and I know he keeps himself in great shape, but there does come a point, no matter how well you look after yourself, that, you know, just look at me, how will you look after yourself that things start to go a little
not
bit
quite worth 150 million, yeah.
£150 million?
Similar money.
Yeah, similar money, definitely. By comparison, anyway. So Liverpool are going to have a week of this. Jurgen Klopp has made it quite clear it's not for sale. Liverpool have as well. Quite whether Salah has his head turned, only he will know over the next week. And it'll be interesting to see whether, if he turns round and says, I quite fancy going, whether Liverpool, having had the situation with Fabinho and Henderson, or whether Liverpool have learned from that and gone, well, it took us weeks and weeks and weeks to get a defensive midfielder in, and you're like literally one of the best players, one of the right wingers in the world. How are we supposed to replace you in a week? So I can't see it happening this summer, although you can't exactly rule it out completely. But this is just a story that's going to now run and run and run. It's going to be like this for the whole of the season. So it will just be interesting to see how it turns out, because I'm pretty sure that Salah will end up in Saudi Arabia at some point. It's probably just, my view is, it's probably just a matter of when rather than if.
Yeah, I tend to agree. Ghosty, quite a lot to unpack, really, and quite a lot to discuss. Something that Doyle said early doors there was that Klopp comparing Liverpool to Wigan and saying that there's this extra layer now with Saudi Arabia. I'd argue that so far this summer, certainly for Liverpool and probably around the market, is that the players who've gone to Saudi Arabia, although unexpected perhaps for Liverpool in terms of their planning, they'd be quite happy that Jordan Henderson's gone there. They get him off the wage bill, get a decent fee in. All right, maybe they probably would have preferred not to have sold Fabinho this summer, but with the money coming in, I think, again, they'd be quite happy with that deal.
Yeah.
Can't Liverpool just say no?
They can, but I think when a bit of that kind of money comes in, it then goes to ownership level, and then that's a major question of the owners. You know, if they see £150 million for Mohamed Salah, what happens then? I actually reckon there's people at Liverpool who are absolutely bricking it at the moment, you know, worrying about a bid come. You know, was it come through now, emails or fax machines or whatever? I think they still use fax machines.
Is it, they still exist?
Ever since the David De Gea thing, I think they stopped using them.
I think they will absolutely be panicking in case that bid comes in, because then it's a major decision for the club and for, more importantly, the owners to take. I agree with you in terms of, I mean, we talked at length about the manner of Henderson's departure and where he's gone and all that, but from a purely footballing point of view, it's not a bad move for Liverpool. Fabinho, perhaps less so, but I think they were happy to gamble with a £40 million fee, thinking we can get an upgrade on that. So far, probably hasn't happened, has it? We'll wait and see how Endo turns out or if anyone else comes in. But for Salah, one of the absolute best players in the Premier League, best players in the world, you'll probably count on one hand the amount of players who are capable of replacing him, and not even, that's not necessarily being better than him, that just can do a similar job. I don't think there's many at all. Kylian Mbappe had a push. After that, you're really struggling. You're clutching the straws. So you can't be allowed to go, you know, looking at it from the outside, looking in. I think there'll be a mutiny if they allow him to go. And I think we'd be put in an awkward position about how we cover that. I think it'd be kind of front page stuff, if I'm honest. So we'll wait and see. But I do think Liverpool are kind of on eggshells at the moment, just in case that bid does arrive.
Yeah. It's interesting what you say about Mbappe, because it's just quite funny, the sense that if Liverpool do go accept £150 million or whatever, so they can just turn around and then go to Paris Saint-Germain and say, here you go, we'll give you £100 million for Mbappe.
All, yeah.
And then they can sell him to Real Madrid at the end of the year for about 500 million. So everybody works out. Well. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Ask Jürgen what he thinks. He's here. Isn't he? I don't know why I didn't introduce him. Decent guest. Yeah, he's enjoying it.
It looks like Vinny O'Connor's talking to him there by the look of his face.
He played the down, didn't he?
He's not happy with that joke. Right, Sean. If this bid had come in, they haven't actually bid yet, but if this interest had been there early in the summer and let's say they did make a bid, do you think we'd be having a different conversation? Do you think that we'd be talking about perhaps selling a 31-year-old Salah, or do you think it would still have been a firm no all summer, this summer?
I think it would have been a no at any point in this summer because I just don't think Liverpool, as they are right now, in terms of how they're constituted with the recruitment, you know, side of things, and God bless him, Jorg, you know, who very much seems an interim sporting director, doesn't he? And like, still on his probationary period. I just don't think they would be geared up to making that sort of replacement decision, you know. And okay, the money would have been there, clearly, if it had been 100, 150 mil for Salah. But I think, as the lads have referenced, you know, you look at the Fabinho and Henderson fallout, and Liverpool just haven't been able to deal with that in a kind of optimal way, I think. Mm-hmm. Like all these Saudi deals have like caught so many clubs on the hop, you know, and it's been massive for some, hasn't it? Like to Chelsea, you've been able to kind of correct mistakes. You can make that same argument for Liverpool, you know, in terms of getting players off the books, as you said before, who I don't think fans would be that disappointed to see go, albeit it just hasn't worked out well strategically. Like both of Fabinho and Henderson going has become a problem. But yeah, as Doyle said as well, like there's such, at this point now, there is just no time to get the replacement done. And as Gorty said, I think it would just cause mass panic. There's no way it can be countenanced now. But I think the conversation has to begin about when he does leave. Because, okay, age-wise, that's not a big concern. He just, as we've said already, he keeps himself in incredible shape. He's still clearly a top player at the top level, you know, personally and just in world football. But on his contract now, there's two more seasons, isn't there? It goes to 2025,
yeah,
I think.
2 years left.
You know, what Liverpool just cannot do, I think, is let him leave for nothing.
Yeah.
And what Saudi offers in some ways, and, you know, there's rights and wrongs about this in kind of every sense, you know, moral senses and stuff, but there is now, as we've said, a bigger fish. You know, Liverpool are more of the Wigan in this arrangement, are they? And I think probably so at some point in the last few years, Liverpool would have thought, well, when do we sell Salah? When do we cash in on him? And when does that set in motion, like a rebuild? And it looked for all the world like that opportunity wouldn't happen because of various things, I suppose. But, you know, COVID, a downturn in market conditions. But it, even next year, with 1 year left on his deal, I mean, Salah would be, he would go for what? Be well upwards of 50 mil.
Harry Kane's just gone for 90 million, hasn't he?
I think
you'd
as well.
You'd be looking for 100 mil, wouldn't you, still?
Surely Saudi Arabian clubs, with the money that they've got, if Liverpool indicated that they would be willing to do a deal, would still be offering. I don't really think the figures would change that much for this year to next. If Salah scores,
well, this goes down to the goals. Whole, we're a year down the line of that league, and we have to see how it goes. So that's the other thing.
Yeah. Is this a big examination? I mean, you just said there, and it's been sort of hinted at throughout this podcast so far that Liverpool are the Wigan here, which I think is financially.
You never want to be the Wigan. Yeah. Speaking of somebody from St. Helens, you do not want to be the Wigan.
Financially, perhaps. But I find, is this an examination of not just player power, but club power, in the sense that Saudi Arabian clubs can't have it all their own way just because they've got a load of money? Surely this is up for the European super clubs almost to show, hang on, we're a far bigger club than any of these clubs will ever be. Yeah. No, you're not having our best asset. This is where you want to play your football. This is where you want to win big prizes. If you want to put your name down in football history. We saw, you know, Vega, the lad from Celta Vigo, going over there, and I think Tony Cruz said was embarrassing.
He was spot on with that.
But if we'd have seen Kylian Mbappe go there, even if it was for a year,
but he hasn't gone, has he?
No, he hasn't exactly. And that is. But my then, point. Is this not an examination of Salah, then, who is 31? But if he wants to compete at the highest level, like Ronaldo did till he was 38.
But the thing about Salah is that he's won the Premier League, he's scored in a Champions League final that they've won. So in terms of Cristiano Ronaldo, it's like for Ronaldo just moved to a different club. I don't think Salah's going to go to another. What I mean, a different club.
Another
I mean, a different
European
club in Europe. I don't think Salah's going to another one of them now at his age. He could have gone. He could have gone, couldn't he? Real Madrid were interested in him, and you know he ended up saying there was all that talk last year, wasn't it, when he signed a new contract that he could have gone elsewhere. So, and it's interesting that his agent didn't he said earlier this month.
About 2 weeks ago, wasn't it?
And that came after the Al Ittihad stuff first came out, and they said the report was that they were going to offer 60 million. Yeah. It's like 60 million. That wouldn't even get one of his legs. Mm-hmm. So I think that I don't know what's changed for them. That's why I just think it's a bit... It feels to me as though it's pressure from out the Saudi Arabia end to get Salah to say that he wants to leave.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the reading of it from my point of view, because if they were really that serious of trying to sign him, they're putting a massive offer, and they'd actually make an offer. Still haven't. Mm-hmm. Whenever we're recording this on the Friday afternoon, they still haven't done it. And we're almost to just less than a week to go.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I've seen some of the footage of the Saudi Pro League, and honestly, I think...
careful.
This started very your dad, isn't it?
I've seen some of the footage. An elite level
what do you think of the German league, Gusty?
I think if you're
French
an elite level
don't ask about player who's currently playing
in the you know, top leagues in Europe, like a Jordan Henderson, like a Fabinho, who weren't so long ago, but turned out in the Champions League finals, and you're going to that standard of football with crowds that, you know, some of the Al Ettifaq crowds are League Two level, you know, 6,000 average attendance, maybe less. I think they should be ashamed of themselves, to be honest.
I wonder a year on, you make that point.
What I would say there is that with Henderson and Fabinho, let's look at those two. Henderson quite obviously knows he's getting towards the end because he's 33. Fabinho probably thinks, I'm not as good as I was, went there the last year, and he knows quite well in his own self. The difference with Salah is that I don't think he thinks that.
No.
So,
no.
I think he's probably looking at it, but this is just, let's be guessing what he's thinking, but you wouldn't be surprised if he looks and goes, well, I don't want to go there yet, because that's not up to the standard that I should be playing at, which is what you were trying to say before. Yeah. So what's he going to win over there?
Do you not think, though, you know,
half a lot of money. Sorry.
That was the word I was going to use. Like, ultimately, this will come down to that. And the position I think Liverpool have no real argument in that. Well, obviously they do. There's the honour. There's the stay at Liverpool and break all the records, you know, and play at this level. But if it comes to next summer or even before then, Liverpool are trying to negotiate a contract with Salah, a new one, which they'd have to do unless they sell him now or next summer. I don't think you can lose Salah for free. You know, we've seen Liverpool do that with too many players. You can't do it with him. But how do they compete? You know, we've already said he's on estimated, what, 300, 400 grand a week. If he's being offered 1.5 million a week, I don't know if Liverpool got a leg to stand on in those negotiations. You know, that's where I think the game has changed. And
Which club has?
Yeah,
none of them
down to the Chelsea style.
And it comes down to the player, doesn't it, to say, you know what, even for 20 million a week, I'm not going to go there because it's just not. And I wonder what you say there, Gorse team. I mean, we laugh, but at the same time, probably none of us ever watched anything from the Saudi Pro League. You may have now watched a few clips to see how certain players that you know are getting on. By the end of the season, some of you may have even watched the full game. I doubt I'm going to find the time to watch 90 minutes of Saudi Arabian football, but I might have watched a few clips. And I wonder over the next season whether we'll find out whether the likes of Mohamed Salah actually fancy going there, because they'll see more of it, it'll be more exposed, they'll see that the crowds aren't very big, they'll see that the standard isn't very high, and we'll see over the next year or so
Henderson's,
whether they're up for it.
Yeah, Henderson's the example I think of this, you know, when they come out and they line it up before kick-off and there's less than 6,000 in the ground or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. He's been playing at Anfield for over a decade. He's used to some of the most red-hot atmospheres that you'll ever play in and you'll ever watch as a football follower or fan or whatever. He must just think, what am I doing here? Like, you know, and then he gets his paycheck and think, oh, fair enough. It's back to the Saturday afternoon, he's thinking, this isn't great. Like, what am I doing here?
But he was at Liverpool for 12 years, a very long time. There aren't many players who last that long at Liverpool, so I think he...
Well, will he stay?
You know, he's not going to go. He's not going to regret going, oh, we should have stayed to have a bit more experiences, because he wasn't going to get many more, was he?
No, but I think for any of the younger players, Vega's a good one.
Well, that's a good example, yeah.
I think that we can watch. Does he stay relevant? And I think, you know, Jordan Henderson, one of the most interesting things, and we're not go down that route again because we'll be here all day, but was him speaking to Gareth Southgate about perhaps staying around the England setup.
And I
found that hilarious, because, like, you know, that if you're going to go and take the money, surely you've got to accept that playing in that league is going to reduce your chances of playing for England. But I wonder whether Vega will still carry on playing for Spain and whether he'll continue the upward trajectory of his career, because you would think not.
It's quite sad that Gabri Vega situation, because Liverpool were taking a look at him, weren't they? We had the Real Madrid, they're interested. Chelsea,
big clubs,
inevitably. Newcastle, Napoli.
Chelsea interested in the player.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it? Hard to believe. And then he goes and shuffles off to Saudi, where he'll just be a particularly good player in that league, but no one will ever think.
Will it be for him to leave that
league? I was about to say exactly the same thing. What will be interesting is, say after a year he goes, I've just earned an absolute fortune. He says, however, I want to go now. So the Saudis go, okay. And what price do they put on him? We just paid an awful lot of money and you've just improved as a player, so here you go.
And let's say he's half decent. Let's say Newcastle, not the right example. Let's say Tottenham offer him $60,000 a week and he's on $200,000 a week. It's going to be hard for him, you know, to go.
But maybe he knows that from the
Maybe
off.
He knows that.
That's
maybe
why
knows
he's that. Gone. Go to get a year or two of a load of money, then he can go, right, I can do whatever I want now. Yeah. Money won't be an issue for the rest of my career. Yeah. So he can actually go where he wants to play.
It's like a mid-career retirement, like a Gary Neville-style mini-retirement, isn't it? Then you come back and play your proper football.
Do you mean a holiday?
Yeah, well, that's what Gary meant as well.
Back to Salah. Crystal ball out. Year's time. Sort of similar money offer. Are you thinking that next summer might be the right time for Liverpool to sell Salah?
Well, if it's all still the same as it is and they're still interested and they're offering £100 million, then yeah.
Let's say Liverpool are in the Champions League and he's scored.
Well, then it's, does he actually want to go then? Let's say Liverpool have done quite well this season. Will he want to go? That's a completely different thing. That's on him.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm asking this whole thing. So I'm inside
John Henry.
Oh, I'm John Henry now.
Yeah. Well, you're a combination between John Henry and Jurgen Klopp. So I want your
John Klopp. John Klopp.
Yeah. I want your footballing reasons and perhaps your financial. You are Liverpool Football Club.
All right. Yeah.
The entire thing. So tell us, what are you going to do next summer?
Give better access to the Echo for a start. Okay, what am I going to do? I think with Salah, if they get a massive offer for him, then they have to entertain it and then just say to him, what do you think, Mo? Do you want to go? That's exactly what will happen if things go the way that they are, I think.
And would you personally say yes?
Would I say yes? Would I be 32? I don't even remember being 32.
Not you. I'm not saying that you're an Egyptian international.
No, you're not.
I've confused you. But would you, if you're Liverpool Football Club still, would you say yes to the offer?
Well, as I said, it entirely depends on whether the money's correct. If they're going to offer £100 million for a player, he's
the money's correct. This is like this fella that tweeted me this week, this Ross fellow, who said that you can never get a straight answer out of Ian Doyle. Is correct.
Is that what he said?
Yeah.
Was it my dad?
If you asked him for a cup of coffee, he'd say, "Well, I don't want a sleeve of coffee, do I, or whatever."
Yeah.
Anyway,
the money is correct. All the figures are correct. Are you saying yes? You'll sell Mohamed Salah.
The only way I would say yes. hang on.
We're getting there.
The only way I would say yes is if the plan has been put in place to replace him. That's the only time you say yes. And once that's all sorted, then you do. Because it won't be like this summer where they've been caught on the hop with Fabinho and Henderson. They've had a whole year, and everybody else, not just Liverpool, but all the clubs will know these are the players that they're probably going to be interested in. We can plan accordingly. And that's why, when the situation or the circumstances, that I would say yes. Is that good enough?
That is good enough. That's good enough. Yeah. That's a yes. Gorsi, same question to you.
repeat the question.
The question is, same circumstances next summer. Let's say Liverpool are in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Would you sell Mohamed Salah at 32?
Yeah, because I don't see a new contract on the horizon for him, because he's currently got the biggest contract Liverpool have ever handed out to anyone. Mm-hmm. You don't improve on those terms for someone who's very much the wrong side of 30 at that point. Mm-hmm. So I think there'll be a massive new strategy in the recruitment department this summer. Replacements for everyone, because now everyone's fair game, aren't they? They obviously clearly haven't had one for Fabinho or Henderson. And he wouldn't have had one for Salah.
No, let's not go back into that.
So I guess now that the thinking is, well, we need 2-3 players for every position now. So, I've said this for a while now. I think this will be Salah's last 12 months for Liverpool anyway.
I will ask you the same question, Sean, but shouldn't Liverpool have been forward planning? He's 31 to replace Salah. He's got two years left in his deal anyway.
I'm not
convinced. He's your most important player, isn't he, or arguably?
I do think that the pitch has changed so much this summer with how quickly the Saudi League has become such a big deal.
How quickly is fair?
You know, that would be my thing. But yeah, in terms of the Salah question, there's not obviously no way you can do anything now. Liverpool can't have a second season of transition. You can't, you know, take the big risk in the next week. There's just no way. You wouldn't get a replacement. But I think plans, as Gorsy said, you have to start planning now. And you have to get a fee for him. You have to be realistic. And I don't see how there's any way they can negotiate a contract. I mean, you know, you can't even get him on a kind of year-rolling deal on his current terms, because there is that glittering prize of trebling, quadrupling his wages elsewhere, being the poster boy of the league. You know, he would clearly be the biggest name in that league, wouldn't he, if he went there? I think they have to start doing it now. And I think he's one of those players where, can you even get a direct replacement for someone like him who is so good? I can't see. I mean, you know, Mbappe, obviously, if you said right now, do you want to swap those two players? I'd say yeah, but I don't think there's many players who do what Salah does on the right side of the pitch as an inverted winger, you know, coming in onto his left foot. I think Liverpool have to start planning to replace him, but almost replace his output around the team. Maybe think what happens on the right wing and don't think of it as being the next Mohamed Salah, more, you know, two or three players, and some of those will be existing guys who come in and do it. But yeah, you've got to get money from Mo, would be my thing. Yeah. So
what I would say, you mentioned then about should they have already been planning to replace him? Well, no, because it was only last year that they actually gave him a contract and extended the contract. So you can't start planning to replace a player you've just finally convinced to remain for 3 years.
I appreciate that, but then you're down to 2 years. Liverpool would often tell people that they plan several windows ahead. Well, that is several windows ahead. 2 years from now is four
have
transfer
there, have
windows.
Have there not already been stories linking Liverpool with Salah replacements before any of this happened?
So that's my point,
summer.
Is it? Are they planning? They should have been planning. Well, and then they might have to go, you know what, we were planning in 2 years to buy X, Y or Z. We might have to bring that forward a year. And we might have to look at slightly different people because it looks like Salah might...
But then the other team, that selling team, will then need to buy a player and so on and so forth. Yeah, it's only weeks ago.
But like Sean's mentioned, even if they were planning for... When they gave Salah a three-year deal, surely they're not planning to lose Salah in 3 years, because they wouldn't be planning to lose Salah on a free.
No, it would be two.
It would be two years. So 2 years is next summer, isn't it?
Yeah.
I know so it's a completely different way of working in terms of the model, but...
It's like, I have a conversation with the Matrix.
You were saying, why shouldn't they have been doing it already?
Yeah, exactly. Well, they should have been doing it already. If they're planning on losing Salah in 2 years, then surely those 2 years should be spent... Part of their recruitment department should be looking for a Salah replacement. Should be getting targets, shaping them up, making sure.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. I'm sure they are, but they would not have been expecting to sign anybody.
No, they were expecting to sign them next summer.
I think totally different models and ways of working. Look at how Man City have replaced their players this season. Obviously, lost. They've just lost Laporte. Haven't they? Signed Guardiola. Mm-hmm. Jeremy Doku's come in when Mahrez has left. Obviously missed out on the midfielder, didn't he? So they're going for Mateus Nunes now instead. Yeah. Yeah. Liverpool still probably found wanting to replace the two who've left, who kind of weren't part of the plan earlier in the summer.
I going to say, that comes down to the money then. Do you think Man City wanted to sell Mahrez? Pretty sure they wouldn't have done.
They just went and bought Jeremy Docket, didn't they?
Yeah, well, that's it. And they've only just done that as well, haven't they? They've got the money for it, and then it comes back to that.
Yeah, they've of course. But Liverpool aren't, you know, and Kobali Gorse says this sometimes. Liverpool aren't this poor team with not a pot to pee in, and they have a amount of money. I hate this idea that Liverpool are Wigan, who are like looking around going, oh, how are we going to afford them?
They've just got
52 million in for Fabinho and Henderson, plus a load of money off the wage bill, a load of money. And there was a lot of talk of, well, our wage bill's high. Well, the wage bill can't be as high as it was, because they're not going to be paying anything in bonuses for last season because it was terrible, and they're not going to be paying. Well, I'm not going to list them because it would take me too long. All those players
about a million a week saved from all those players left.
So this idea that Liverpool can't replace certain players because they've just made a £100 million bid for a player. So the money's there.
There's a slightly different conversation between replacing, say, Fabinho and Henderson and doing it well, albeit I would add the caveat of I don't think that was the job that Schmacher and Co were expecting to do this summer. And then what you do with Salah, who's already a massive earner. I just think there might have been a world in which Liverpool waited a year or two and thought, well, okay, do we cash in on Salah now? And that's part of the reason for the new contract, you know, tie him down. And then they probably had a look at him and think, is he physically still there at, you know, 32, 33? And made the decision then. But I think that decision now is so much harder because of the Saudi League and how much they'll be putting on the table as for Rami and Mo to walk in and go, well, look at that.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Oh, I absolutely think the Saudi League has shaken things up this year. But I think the point still stands that they gave Mohamed Salah a three-year contract last summer. They would have been planning 2 years down the line to either give him a new contract on probably vastly reduced terms or replace him. So in their head, they can still work to that plan next summer. And if they haven't got a plan to replace him, then we're seeing, like the midfield and possibly like the defence, that they don't have a good plan. And recently, Liverpool have been exposed in the transfer market of not having a good plan.
It's not really the framework you want. Yeah. Is it either to be replacing Mo Salah, you want Michael Edwards at his absolute best, all the kind of good noises coming out of the club. You know, now at the time, which Schmack's kind of got into his final days of his contract, I guess, is it a 3 month?
August, wasn't it?
It's not ideal, is it?
No, it's not. Anyway, moving on from Salah, Ghosty. What else did Jurgen Klopp have to say in his press conference? I know there was some injury news, some slightly concerning news for the weekend.
Already, Liverpool are counting the cost of injuries, aren't they? Ibu Konate is going to miss Newcastle on Sunday.
Is he a doubt or is he definitely going to miss?
Is he a doubt? Yeah. Okay. Already, that's a concern.
He's a doubt, so he's probably going to miss it as well, isn't he?
And I think it was James Pearce actually who asked him about potential defensive reinforcements. And I mean, I don't know about you, Dodie, but I was unsure as to what he meant with any of that answer. He kind of hinted that he was happy with his options, but that they were still looking, and I didn't really know what to take from the answer. So he mentioned Jarrell Kwanza, which was interesting. Kwanza was paired at the training ground, just kind of knocking about. I'd be concerned if the manager's mentioning him. And, you know, if you were steadfast about getting another defender in, which I think Liverpool already do need. Curtis Jones injured as well, isn't he? So, you know, nothing new here, but Liverpool already starting to see one or two issues, which is why most people have been talking about the need to bolster the squad. And a week left of the window, and it's going to be a massive week, I think.
We talked at length, Doyle, last week about centre-halves and injury problems perhaps biting this season. Is this a slight worry then that Konate, who's, you know, we're looking at him thinking it's going to be a key season for him, is already suffering something?
The more that I look at Jurgen here on our screen and think about what he said about the centre-backs, is that I think he's having a bit of a slight, not dig, but a little kind of like prod at the recruitment team, as if to say, we need a centre-back here. Come on, we need a centre-back. Because he did, there was slight, we were trying to listen to it properly, weren't we? We didn't know whether or not he'd actually said that.
Yeah, we were a few rows back, weren't we? Which you don't get every single word. So you have to listen to it back from YouTube. But he said, now we need a bit of luck with injuries, didn't he? I don't know whether he was referring specifically to Konate for this weekend or just generally, but I think, I mean, there was talk that Endo can play centre-back as well, but you don't want any square pegs in round holes this early on, do you?
No. I mean, go on. The thing about the centre-backs as well is that he also mentioned in that a reply, he said, we've found that in the past when we've, you know, he said something, what did he say? Something like, we're in dreamland if you have a lot of options for each position. Mm-hmm. Says that's not always the case, as we've learned that in the past. And obviously that's in reference to the midfielders last season and the centre-backs two seasons before that. And he's already, that's what makes me think that he's thinking, come on, we actually do need a centre-back. And we know that they'll like Cole Will at Chelsea, and it's obviously for quite a while, he's not leaving Chelsea, and he's signed a new deal, didn't he? So that's the end of that. And, well, that lad who's at Tottenham, Mickey Van der Ven. They were never really, as far as we're concerned. I think that was one of people putting two and two together because of the Schmadke links. But there's loads of defenders out there. And we know that they've got some money. Even if it's not the full, you know, 95 million or 90 million that's left over, you can still get a defender, a good defender, for £50 million. Yeah. I think the only problem for Klopp is that he does the old thing of he likes to stay loyal to the team. Mm-hmm. And he's worried. I wouldn't say worried, but his concern would be, buy this big money centre back, nobody leaves, because there's no guarantee that Nat Phillips is going to leave. Mm-hmm. Then you've got six, plus he mentioned Kwanzaa, that's seven. And then he's going to say, what am I supposed to do with all of these? And I think he's always had that, hasn't he? He's always mentioned about, we can't have the massive, massive, massive squad, because how do I keep everybody happy? But I think there he's suggesting that, look, Konate is a bit injury prone, Van Dijk's 30 odd, Matip, he's going to have to be replaced anyway.
Yep.
So that comes down to kind of what you were saying before about Salah. Is this could be an opportunity for them to get somebody in, and even if they don't play all the games all season, they're going to be somebody who's going to be ready then for when Matip goes. And who knows what else could happen, because Van Dijk will then be 33, 34 at the start of next season. So
33, yeah.
Yeah, so these are, he's not getting any younger. Liverpool do need a centre-back, I think, and I've been saying this all summer. And I think that my take from what Jurgen Klopp said there is he probably thinks the same thing as well without actually saying it.
Is it not a big concern, Sean? That, I mean, we spoke about this, I'm pretty sure it was last Friday's podcast, about having these concerns in the middle of the season if they don't sign a centre-half. But we're having this conversation 3 games in, ahead of a big game, that if Liverpool lose, I mean, it's very, very early in the season, but if you lose to a top four rival because of certain injury problems at the back, it's pretty galling. Is it not? I mean, I know it's been a summer of chaos because of certain outside forces maybe Liverpool didn't plan for, but the summer started really well. They've obviously wanted and needed a centre-half all summer. They clearly wanted Colwill. Maybe there was a bit of a waiting game to see whether he'd stay at Chelsea, but it's been clear that he was going to stay at Chelsea for a good 5 weeks now.
Yeah.
Maybe even longer than that. And even when they wanted him, they must have known that that was always going to be a long shot, because even if he wanted to come, Chelsea were going to make life difficult.
Yeah.
So isn't this another thing that we're looking at going, how have they got to a week of the window left, no centre-half, injury?
Massively, and I would argue as well with the centre back situation. It's not the first time that this has happened. Is it that the season where everyone dropped, you know, obviously Van Dijk, and then I can't remember the order now. Was it Van Dijk, then Gomez, then Matip
in terms of
injuries? Yeah. And like as soon as Gomez was injured, things should have been in motion for that January. And whilst this time, okay, the injury's now and it's late. I think the trigger for this, really, okay, they have been looking as we've said about Colwill and others, but the trigger should have been when regularly the team start playing free at the back. Because, like, you know, Klopp said it himself today in the press conference. Kanate had to do a lot of running, and, okay, it was because it was against 10 men. But in this system now, I think in some ways it plays to his strengths. He's obviously technically a brilliant player, all-round athlete as well. It's a very acute role in terms of what you have to have about you to be able to do it, and he's got that. But it asks so much of him every single game. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the other flank, and you've got Robertson, who isn't a centre-back. I think that's just obvious, isn't it? And there's ways of testing him. I think not that he's a weakness in this system, but there's still a lot he has to learn and adapt to it. And just the fact that you're playing 3 of them, like, often, you know, like, and they're doing the work of 4, really, this should have happened a while ago. And now I'd say it's more of a pressing need to get a central defender in than it is another midfielder right now at this point. The one thing, not to kind of undo everything I've just said there, but what I was slightly surprised about in the first 2 games of the season, I thought it was going to be box midfield, 3 at the back would be like what we'd see for like most of the games. But was at the Bournemouth game, and obviously we just watched the Chelsea game on telly, but it seemed like it was a lot more 4-3-3 in the shape for quite a lot of the match. And obviously, again, there's the caveat of McAllister going off and them having to go 4-4-1 effectively against Bournemouth for the last half hour. But I think if you're only then saying there's 2 centre-backs and Trent at right-back and Robertson or Tsimikas is at left-back, it's not quite as bad. So, you know, if they're doing that and then they're being quite a bit more careful about when they transition to the 3 at the back thing, then you can get away with it for a little while. But that's all it is. It's getting away with it. There's clear that another body's needed than the kind of mental gymnastics about justifying how many we've got or saying, well, you know, it would be dreamland to have that many. I always say that type of thing with a bit of a pinch of salt, because look back at last summer when Klopp was talking about the midfielders and you know, listing his array of options whilst actually trying to sign Tchouaméni or whoever in the background, Bellingham. You know, I don't think you can ever... The manager's got to back his lads, hasn't he? And, you know, he'll always say things like that, but I can only hope that there is work ongoing and that someone crops up, because, you know, this Kanate thing should be... The trigger should have happened a while ago, but this should be, like, the glaring red light that they need to do one.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Just in the immediate future, Gorsley, do you think that you have to lose the box formation and that this weekend? Because Kanate seems to be such a key part of that in the way that he plays and his domination of that side.
I think I mentioned it on the most recent pod we did, and Doyle spoke to him last year, didn't you, as part of a kind of sit down with him, and he said, this new formation's a bit different, I'm having to do loads of work and I can't do it all the time. And he is overworked, isn't he, on that right side? And I think a lot of that is down to Klopp asking Trent to play 2 positions. You can't really expect him to do absolutely everything, can you? I agree with Sean there. I think Liverpool absolutely have to bring another centre-back. I mean, you can't start throwing Kwanzaa in as a potential option. He was on loan at Bristol City in January. He was playing on under-21s football last season, a good prospect. But if he plays, you know, his next game for Liverpool is his senior debut. So
should be a League Cup game, shouldn't
it? Yeah. Liverpool, much work to do in the final week of the window, which is something they've not really been used to for the last 5 years.
I think they've got enough forwards, they've got enough goalkeepers. As far as I'm concerned, you can get by with the midfield, even with the injuries, because they're still... McAllister? You don't really want Gakpo playing there, but the point is you've got McAllister, Szoboszlai, Endo, then you've got Jones, Thiago, and Elliot, and Bacetic. There's seven. Even if four of them are injured, you can still get by in a game. So, you know, you can't just keep on buying players forever. Although, as we saw last year, there can be a chance that almost everybody gets injured or loses form. But it would be a dereliction of duty for them not to sign a centre-back now, I think. Yeah. I think they're just setting themselves up for a massive fall if they don't, especially with the comments. That's almost like go and get, not a come and get me plea, but a go and get somebody plea without it actually being one, is what it sounded like. But I should really make a note of this. I might do a piece later.
But again, I've mentioned them twice now, but Man City last year lost a couple of defenders to injury, so went and bought Manuel Akanji. And he didn't cost the earth. He was 16 million from Dortmund. Yeah. There are players out there. Okay, I think there was a contract situation there and they obviously kept some tabs on it, but you don't have to go and spend 60, 70 million on someone.
To me,
it comes down to the City thing. City can throw 16, 20 million.
Yeah.
And then they, if it doesn't work, they go, okay. But Liverpool feel as though, hang on, the next centre-back doesn't have to be for now, it has to be for the next five or ten years.
Endo's not, but that's what I'm about to say.
Then Endo's kind of that shows that perhaps that policy has changed because it has to change to fit the means of what or the situation that it is.
It comes back to what Klopp said, and I hang on this every time we talk about it, but that take more chances to FSG. Yeah. Take more chances. Yeah, summer, and Liverpool in the next week have to take a chance. Really quickly, because we're coming towards the end of it, just wanted to quickly, Newcastle, very polarised.
There's a game.
Very polarising club, aren't they, Newcastle? I was quite liking growing up. I really like Bobby Robson. I think they had some good flair players that I used to quite like watching. But obviously in recent years, I'm going to ask you to keep it brief, but what are your thoughts on Newcastle? Where do you stand on Newcastle?
Club, City?
Not the City, the club, obviously.
Similar to you, there's a whole Keegan connection, wasn't there, growing up?
Like Keegan, yeah.
You know, I never really go as far as say I had the second club, but I used to like, you know, Liverpool games against them were always great, weren't they, which helped growing up. Obviously what's happened in recent years is not very palatable, but I have... don't know if this is quite the right type of answer that you're after, but I have a begrudging respect for how they're recruiting. Eddie Howe. And so I kind of, I'm looking at what they're doing and thinking it's all very sensible, but I wish they weren't doing it.
Yeah.
Ghosting.
Got no real time for Eddie Howe. I just think he's a little bit of a middle of the road, won't rock the boat. And I think he's ideal for what Newcastle are now in terms of those tricky ownership questions. He just straight bats them and people move on. But like the club and the... you know, whole massively supported club in a big city up in the northeast and all that kind of stuff. Feel they're just being used as a kind of Saudi Arabian government toy, which is a massive shame. But the supporters are within the right to enjoy what's happening to them at the moment, I guess.
Dolly?
Joe, if you had to draw Eddie Howe, how if so, what proportion would his features be compared to the rest of his face?
Get rid of Klopp and put David Squires' Eddie Howe face. That's my favourite thing about Eddie Howe. It always will be. And, although I would say I've been impressed by his work last season. When I really thought Eddie Howe was like your average sort of young English manager who gets a bit more credit because they're young and English. But yeah. I think he did do really well last season and played in a style that I didn't really expect. I thought he would go and try and make Newcastle this sort of really nice on the eye team. And they're bad on the eye, but they dug in as well. One thing that I was really impressed with last year is they scored goals at the right times. How many times did you watch Newcastle and you would think they're under a bit of pressure here or, you know, they need a goal here and they get one. And that, I think, is a really, really good attribute in a team if they can get goals at the right time. But what do you think, Dolly? Did actually tell us?
I deflected that quite successfully, didn't I?
It's not like you to deflect a question.
Yeah. That's what it's years of doing this job and having it done to me. I'm doing it again. Right. Newcastle. The food's good in the press box now, so that's good. That's better. In terms of actually, as a club, funny enough, right, when Eddie Howe first got appointed, it wasn't by these owners, was it, if you remember? And
Yes, where, it was, wasn't it?
Was it?
They sacked. Yeah, they sacked Bruce.
Literally, they sacked Bruce.
That's right. And you, you're right. Actually, yeah. But he didn't make a great start, did he?
No.
Didn't make a great start. And I remember I put a tweet saying, "Is he going to be the first or the next manager to be sacked?" And every now and again, I'll get some Newcastle fan retweeting this from about the Reds. But what? So I'm going to do it again and say that I'd be surprised if Eddie Howe's still in charge this time next year.
Really?
Yep. I think it's an interesting season. I agree with Sean on the way that they've recruited. They haven't done a Chelsea and spent billions, but that's partly because they can't, because of the FFP, and it'll be interesting to see what happens when that moves on a little bit and allows them to start spending a load more money, because I'd imagine that they would be. In terms of the team, when Liverpool beat them 2-0 last February, you weren't there, were you?
No.
No, right, so it was me and Theo, wasn't it? Yeah. Now, speaking to one of the local reporters who I know, and they were like, "Oh, it's just going to fall away now. They'll play the League Cup final."
That was the following weekend.
Yeah, they'll play the League Cup final and they'll probably get beat. Or even if they win, they'll go, "Yeah, we're in Europe." And then they'll fall away. And then if they get beat, they'll fall away because we just can't score any goals. And of course, since then, they scored loads of goals towards the end of the season, didn't they? Because at the first, I think at that point, I think they scored something like five goals and about seven or eight.
It's flipped over, hasn't it?
So, In that sense, I was surprised by the way that they held on, to be honest. So I was quite impressed with that. But I do think that they are a level below the others at the moment. I think Liverpool are still the team. They're the target for Liverpool, still. Yeah. And I think overall it'll be interesting to see how they cope with playing in the Champions League as well this year. Certainly. I mean, not new for them as a club because they were in it loads of times in the 90s.
Yeah, I mean, for 20 years, though, I think.
But it's for, you know, and I think going
it's new for the team, isn't it?
Talking about the fans, I think they had to put up with a lot with Mike Ashley, so you can't really begrudge them too much of, like, you know, celebrating the way things are going at the moment. But although I'm quite glad that they've toned down the whole Saudi thing, which they did have at the start, I think they've kind of realised that's probably wasn't the way to go. But again, as Gorsi said, they are just like the plaything for them. It'll be interesting to see how that develops further down the line if they don't start winning stuff pretty soonish, because that's what makes me think that Eddie Howe might be in trouble if they don't. Like, it wouldn't surprise me, for example, if Newcastle finished sixth and didn't get to any cup final this year, and then you go, "Well, hang on, what are we going to do now?"
And really, and they wouldn't, it's not a bad season.
Exactly. I was going to say because
the form last season, like, look at some of the players who are in their starting 11, and you think, are these Champions League players? But they're going to be. So, but I do agree with you in terms of how they're going to have to handle the Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday fixture turn around now with the squad they've got. I don't think
you get more injuries, don't you? I think immediately.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
All right, well, we'll move on to picking our teams quickly and making predictions. Sean, start with you. Alisson Becker in goal. Pick your back four if Konaté is not fit.
Yeah, well, going back to what I said before, I think it will be more of a four, and it will be Trent, Robertson, obviously Van Dijk. The final call, I think, is really hard because you go with Gomez, who's, well, Matip hasn't played so far, has he, last couple of games, whereas Gomez has come on off the bench at least and had a little bit of a run out. You know, his pace and as a more direct replacement for Konaté, it's probably him. But I think just because of all, there's so many like units in the Newcastle team, isn't there? Like Bairn, Isak's massive, someone else, Botman's massive. Mm-hmm. I would say Matip gets it just in terms of aerial presence.
Yeah. So, I'd go the same, Matip over Gomez. I don't think either of them had great seasons last season, but needs must, I guess, if Konaté's out.
Totally.
Well, I initially thought Matip, but the more I'm thinking about it, the more I think Gomez.
The other way.
Yeah. Because I think they are quite quick. Matip had a few iffy games early on in the summer. Early on in the summer, he's better after that. But yeah, the fact that Gomez has been getting on, and he can, if they do decide to play that box midfield, it was more when you were explaining it before, is that he has got the pace to come across, and he has played right back loads of times, so he understands both positions, so I'd probably say him.
As ever, I agree with my friend Ian Doyle, and would put Gomez in there, only with a view sort of the future and a bit quicker down that side. Midfield, does Endo go straight in, Sean?
I think he has to, yeah. I think it'll be him and McAllister finally in that slightly more advanced role and Szoboszlai,
I don't think there's too many arguments to be made. You know, every one of the other midfielders have got issues, haven't they? But Bešetić and Thiago haven't played since March and April, respectively. Jones is still struggling with that ankle injury. Elliot, possibly. But I'd be minded to go with the same one as Sean.
I think it has to be the new three. I think what will be interesting is that Szoboszlai will now be on the left rather than the right, which is where he's been for the first two games, because McAllister will be on the right. That's right, isn't it? It's correct, yeah. Szoboszlai has been on the left during the summer. And I think Harvey Elliott is probably about as close as you can get to being in the team without being in the team.
Yeah, he's done
because
well,
I think his
he?
Two cameos that he's had from the bench,
yeah.
I think he's been really good. Yeah. And he was really good in the last... He did the same thing at Southampton last game last season, came on and was really good. And he's done really well when he's played during the summer, so he can't do much more.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think we'll see a load of him this season, just not quite yet.
Yeah. Okay, forward line, Sean. Any changes in there?
This is the one where I would put Gakpo down the middle, up top, so which means probably Jota, which feels very unfortunate given I think he's had a weird couple of games where he's had spells in them both where he's been amazing, and he has had them product. But yeah, I wouldn't start him. It would be Diaz, Gakpo, Salah.
Agreed, Sean. Great front three. Ghosty.
Yeah, I think so. Jota's a strange one, isn't he? Sometimes you watch him and he goes, not having a great game, and then he gets a little assist or he gets a goal or whatever. And that's a huge asset to have. I think he's Liverpool's best player inside the penalty area. But I just think Gakpo, for his security and possession, his ability to carry it over distances, with Salah on the right and Diaz on the left.
So nobody really? Dropping Salah? No, not for this one, no. Not sending out that message. Yeah, I played Gakpo as well. Purely because, well, two reasons. One, he keeps the ball a lot better. And I agree with what you said about Jota. It's very hard to rate. He comes up with the end products, but if he's not doing that, then sometimes he looks as though he hasn't played football before. But what he is a massive pest. Don't know whether you remember Paul Dickoff for City. In the old days, he used to be like everyone who used to play against, annoying. Yeah. And I'd imagine Jota would be quite annoying to play against.
Yeah.
So I think that he'd be quite good to bring on in the second half if it offers Liverpool something a little bit different. And of course, there's still Darwin Nunes, who we could do an entire podcast just talking about him. But I think he's just, again, somebody like Elliott who's just got to bide his time because he'll get loads of chances to play. And when he gets them, I think he showed in the summer that he's probably going to score a few more goals than he did last year.
Yeah, that's the thing about Jota, isn't it? I always feel like I drop Jota, but he's great off the bench. And I don't think any of the other players make the same impact off the bench. So I'm always happy to have Jota in reserve, because you think if they need a goal late on, or even if they're leading, you wouldn't be surprised if he comes on and nicks one.
Yeah.
But I do think, at Chelsea, there's been a lot of talk this season about Liverpool not using the ball well. I think he's a big part of that. I think he's awful with his back to goal. And just, he works back, sometimes wins it back, and then gives it away so quickly. And Liverpool have got to stop the ball coming back at them. Predictions-wise, then, Sean?
Really difficult. I think it'll be very tight. Liverpool did the double over them last season, didn't they? Mm. But obviously the Anfield goal was very late. A bit boring saying this, but I'm going to say 1-1. I just think it's one of those where neither team will want to lose this. It feels like a...
Yeah, I'm going to go 2-2. I think it'll be an entertaining game. I just can't see Liverpool coming away with the 3 points.
I can't see Liverpool winning either. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 2-1 to Newcastle. But...
I like you, Neil.
I said I wouldn't be surprised. No, I said 3-1 against Bournemouth. I got it right last
week. Yeah, so did I. We matched up again.
Exactly. We're always agreed on everything, but probably 1-1, isn't it? It's going to be 1-1.
I'm going to go with Gorsi and say 2-2. I think there are goals in this, but I think it's going to be a tough one. But plenty of goals and a pretty good game. I think if they can shut the crowd down early doors, that would be massive. So we will be back on Monday, Bank Holiday Monday, to talk about the Newcastle results. Hopefully some transfers and the final few days of the transfer window. Thanks for listening. See you then. It's all right.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.